It is that time. It has been that time here on a Monday. What's going on, Nashville, Middle Tennessee, wherever it is that you stream 104.5 The Zone? We appreciate you guys hanging out here with us on this manic mock draft Monday. We have been talking about all things in the Nashville area. There is a lot going on in the Nashville sports ecosystem. And the story of the day has been the report that Eddie George, reportedly, according to several reports, will become the next head coach at Tennessee State University. Now, this breaking news update from Chris Harris at WSMV, TSU has made it official that they are not renewing the contract of head football coach Rod Reed. Quote, after thoroughly evaluating the state of the TSU football program, we've decided that it was time to make a change in leadership. That's from TSU Athletic Director Dr. Mickey Allen. No mention, though, at this point of Eddie George. Now, we welcome in Howard Gentry Jr., one of TSU's most notable alumni, a Nashville native, criminal court clerk of Davidson County in the 20th Judicial District. Mr. Gentry, what's going on? We appreciate you joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me. A lot is going on, and as being a former athletics director at Tennessee State, I know Coach Allen, Dr. Allen, has his hands full, and I'm confident that they're going to make the right decision.
No question about that. So there have been many reports about what their decision will be, but let's talk first about Coach Rod Reed, because this was an unenviable position that he found himself in yesterday after TSU suffered a loss. And in the post-game press conference availability, he was having to largely field questions about everything but what happened on the football field and what was going on with his team currently. He spoke, though, Howard, on what TSU football has been up against financially from a recruiting standpoint and all of the things that HBCUs have traditionally struggled with, or at least as long as I've been around and seeing that level of football, FCS football, kind of struggle with from a financial standpoint. How difficult is the position that Rod Reed has been in up until this point where they're not renewing the contract of the head football coach?
Oh, it's definitely been challenging for him. It's challenging at all HBCUs, even the ones that seem to be shining right now. There's always the budget issue. There's always issues around getting a large pool of quality athletes to be able to compete over a sustainable period of time because of all the other competing schools that are draining a lot of the pool. So it's always a challenge, but it's a challenge that people like Coach Reed and others have stepped up to and been successful in it. Coach Reed has gotten him a national championship. He's consistently sent players to the NFL, and he's had a very respectful career. He's been at TSU 11 years, which is a long time for a coach to stay at one institution. And he's a good person. He's a amazing family man, just a good person. And he's TSU blue all the way through. But it's been a tough job. It's been tough for him because of all of the information that has kind of leaked out. And you never want a coach to have to be faced with that at the end of their tenure. So, you know, he's had to endure a lot with the challenges over the last 3 years, with weather challenges, one season where two games were postponed or ended, where he had the COVID situation, and it's been a tough for him. And so I applaud him for how he has handled himself and his players and his teams through these challenges. I applaud him for having to field the way he fielded the tough questions on yesterday and how he's going to have to function from this point forward. But what I do know is the kind of person that he is, the talent that he is, he is going to land on his feet, and he is going to, this is not the end for him. This could be what we can call a new beginning. So it's not just TSU looking for a new beginning. But Coach Reed's going to, he's got a lot left in his tank, and he's going to do well.
Without question. And as you said, I mean, it could not be more admirable the way that he kind of handled the situation last night. I was very, very impressed going back. And I was not a part of the press conference live, but to go back and watch through this morning, I could not have been more impressed with the way that he conducted himself. We're here with Howard Gentry Jr., Tennessee State alum, former AD, Nashville-based politician. Howard, I'd list all your civic engagements, but there's too many. There's too many for me to get through without having to get you off the air. But at this point, Howard, the report of Eddie George potentially joining Tennessee State as the new head football coach is something that is being reported at a great many outlets at this point. With Eddie in particular, understanding how long you've been in this community and knowing what Eddie means to this community, if this were indeed the case, how big an impact could Eddie have, understanding that he has no prior coaching experience and being thrust into a position, allegedly or reportedly rather, that would see him be a head football coach at the collegiate level?
Well, first, let's and you have been quite fair to TSU, because that has not been announced by the university yet. So we're not going to quite put Eddie in that position until TSU says so.
Yes, sir.
And until Eddie George says so. But let's, since it's already being done with Deion Sanders, and since it is being talked about, it's kind of funny that you want, I mean, not you, but people want to pick and choose what he hasn't done. It's a new day, guys. It's a new day, but it's really not. Back in the old days, back in the John Mary days that everybody talks about, back in the Henry Arthur King, Jake Gaither's at Florida A&M, Eddie Robinson's at Grambling, all these guys were teachers. They weren't just coaches. They were in the classroom. They had other skills, other abilities that made them great coaches. Coach Cat Coleman, the coach ran the offense for TSU, taught science. Other coaches, kinesiologists, and great educators. So these guys had skills beyond playing football and coaching. And these guys also came off the football field and quickly got head coaching jobs. They did. I mean, this is the way it was, especially in HBCUs back in the day. And people want to go back in the day and talk about people like my dad. My dad had 2 degrees. My dad didn't have a whole lot of coaching background before he became head coach at TSU. He pulled his name out of a hat when Coach King got sick and became head coach and won 2 national championships. I mean, so to look at Deion Sanders and Eddie George, this is a model that is being recreated at just a higher level. So for Eddie to, if Eddie George becomes the head coach at Tennessee State and Tennessee State utilizes this model, that it can be a huge plus for the university. It could be a huge plus for the football program if he surrounds himself, if he does become the coach and surrounds himself with outstanding coaches that can teach kids. Eddie George could be a great recruiting tool, because there's no other coach, I don't believe, in the NCAA that can come packing the Heisman hardware. And if he can convince a kid or a family that he has the ability to teach a kid up, to teach him up to be able to replicate what he has done. Eddie has an MBA. People don't talk about that, but he's got an MBA from Northwestern. He is an example of the coaches we used to have, coaches that have all types of skills, and then they brought those skills and those techniques to the football field to create great players and great programs. So I don't see a downside. The only, I don't see a downside. And on the other thing, it's not about the decision. It's not about Eddie George as much as it is trusting those people who are making the decisions. Trusted Mickey Allen, who played for a national championship team, who played in the NFL, who has experienced the University of Tennessee, trusting the president. And oh, by the way, I caught the devil when I hired L.C. Cole. Cole played at Nebraska. L.C. Cole had no head coaching experience. L.C. Cole doesn't know anything about HBCUs, and all he did was came and gave us our first two OVC championships. So we have to give the process a chance. HBCUs need a shot in the arm. This type of model that's happening at Jackson State and happening possibly happening at Tennessee State might be the shot in the arm to bring back the resources, bring back an opportunity to have an infusion of athletes at 4- and 5-star athletes come back into the HBCU system in numbers that can create stronger programs, better teams, and be more competitive on a larger scale. So you can look at it in a negative way, but I see positives. I see an opportunity to bring greatness back to universities, not just at TSU, but around the country, HBCUs, because historically, if we go deep, it's not new. It's just improved.
Without question. And this is why this is such a fascinating conversation. Howard Gentry Jr. here with us on 104.5 The Zone. It's such a nuanced conversation, Howard, because people like myself who do not remember a time when this process was not as much football focused, when candidates were considered from more well-rounded backgrounds, for lack of a better term, it often does get so hyper-focused on, okay, what is their football resume? What is their football background? And how that could even come up in a conversation, whether it's Eddie George or Deion Sanders. I mean, not to take anything away from Jackson State or Tennessee State, but when you talk about those two individuals, if Eddie does in fact end up becoming the coach of TSU, if that is in fact the case, I mean, I don't understand why we aren't talking about these two individuals if they are interested in, and they are expressing, or at least Deion has expressed an interest in coaching, why they can't be considered at a higher level of football, and really why they're even being questioned at the level of FCS football. This is it's a fascinating case study, I think, into how we go about the hiring of coaches and why we are so hyper focused on just the football element, understanding that it is a football job.
Well, that's what it is. And if you look at the great coaches, if you look at Nick Saban, what you need to look at is his assistant and see where they are now. Coaching, head coaching, being successful all over the country. In other words, what makes Nick Saban great is that he has the best coaches in the country, and they're able to recruit and bring the best players in the country, so they end up having the best program in the country. Ohio State, all these other programs, the same way. The coaches are not football geniuses. Every now and then you'll get one or two that are called geniuses at X's and O's, but they better be geniuses in being able to run their program, to be able to handle the operations, the finances, the all the other things, making sure the program is run properly as it relates to NCAA requirements and all those other things. I mean, a head coach is more than an X and O coach. And if the head coach is looked at as being the top X and O coaches, I will almost guarantee you that program will not win. They cannot be a sustainable, successful program. It's got to be the entire operation. And people like Eddie George's and folks have the same qualities as the Nick Sabans and the other coaches at other institutions. And so, no, I don't see a real downside at, not like I say, not just TSU, but right now we're talking about TSU,
yes,
but other HBCUs, because I'm going to tell you something. It is important now to bring alternative resources into athletics programs, not just HBCUs, but all over the country, but especially at HBCUs. HBCUs are a special, bring, offer special opportunities for kids that might not get the opportunity, just the university as a whole. So if you can create an athletics program, a football program that can attract national attention, that helps in not just football recruiting, but university recruiting, a program that can bring resources to the university, whereby the resources don't have to come out of the general fund, it provides the university an opportunity to provide more funding for educational purposes for the students within the university. The whole university structure grows and matures. And if you talk about Eddie George personally, here's a man who has a legacy already built. Do you really think that he is going to risk that legacy crumbling? If he does come to TSU, if Deion is at Jackson State, they must believe that they can actually create a winning program, a new legacy. And it's not just now a football legacy. It's helping a mid-major program, an HBCU, to be able to thrive and succeed in times where it's tough. And so I applaud them for even wanting to think about doing it. And if we get Eddie George, then I applaud Eddie for trying. You know, Eddie is more than just Eddie George to me. He's a good friend. He's like a little brother to me. And I've been very distant from this situation because I don't want to have to lie to you all on the radio and act like I don't know stuff.
Yes, sir.
But the fact is that I don't know who he's bringing with him if he does come to TSU. And I don't know if he said yes. But the fact is, we'll find that out pretty soon. And if he does say yes, then I think this is going to be a great opportunity for Tennessee State University, not just athletically.
Without question, it has been a great opportunity for us to be joined by Howard Gentry Jr., Tennessee State alum, former athletic director, now serving as the criminal court clerk of Davidson County in the 20th Judicial District. Sir, it was a great pleasure to talk to you. I hope that we will be able to talk with you again soon if more news does develop. We really do appreciate you taking some time. I know your schedule's busy right now.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for covering the Big Blue and all that you all do. You all do a great job for all the sports in Nashville.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Howard Gentry Jr. has been our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. All right, there's a lot of information in there. We have to change gears here because Johnny Glennon has been waiting very, very patiently. We will speak to John Glennon and react to what Howard Gentry Jr. has said about Eddie George at TSU, hypothetically, here on 104.5 The Zone. All right, so I don't mean to disrespect my next guest, because I love Johnny Glennon of Broadway Sports, and this is his debut. I know he's a regular here on these airwaves, but this is the first time on my radio show. Now, Glennon comes by the podcast quite frequently, but we had to go long there with Howard Gentry Jr., former TSU athletic director, because of the news of the day. So, Johnny, I don't mean any disrespect, buddy. I'm sorry to keep you waiting, but welcome to the show. It's lovely to have you on.
Thank you, Buck. I think anytime you begin the intro by "no disrespect intended," that's always an interesting start. I appreciate you having me on.
No, without question. Well, we wouldn't have you on unless you were informed about what the hell is happening with the local professional hockey team, because I had them dead, buried, and gone 3 weeks ago, Johnny, and since then they have won 12 of their last 15 games, a shootout victory last night against the Stars, who have played a very, very competitive stretch of games against throughout the course of this season. Where do we even start? But the goaltending, UC Saros, has been incredible. Is he responsible for saving their season at this point?
I think you certainly have to point to him as the single biggest factor. You know, he's had hot stretches in the past, but I don't think we've seen anything like we're seeing right now for Saros. I mean, this is, you know, good 3 weeks or so, and it's not just above average, but way above average. So to me, he is the number one reason, but you have to look beyond that as well. You know, special teams for the Predators were a disaster. You know, for most of the year, they have made big strides on the power play, on the penalty kill. And then you look at some of these individual guys, they're getting contributions from, you know, certainly a guy like Elie Tolvanen has been coming through here big time, you know, and they're getting other people to chip in as well. You know, whether it's a Granlund, you know, whether it's a Cali Yarncroke, a Luke Cunning, a lot of people chipping in that weren't necessarily doing so before. So all of a sudden, this is a much different team than we saw, as you say, you know, just 3 weeks to a month ago.
John Glennon of Broadway Sports is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. Make sure you follow Johnny G at Glennon Sports on the socials. By the way, the Preds have just announced that they've signed defenseman Josh Healy to a one-year, two-way contract for the remainder of the 2021 season. Johnny, why does Preds PR put out the contract numbers and we can't get Titans PR to do anything of the sort? Is this something that we can lobby for so we're not waiting a month and a half for Janoris Jenkins' contract?
It's a very good question. Yeah, I think, you know, the NHL and in particular the Preds, you know, years ago made that decision because, you know, a lot of times numbers were coming out that were wrong. You know, yeah. People were hearing this, hearing that, people, you know, getting a little tidbit right or maybe something wrong about the contract. And you know, at that point they figured, you know, why hesitate and, you know, why let wrong information circulate out there? Why not just get the money out when it's going to get out eventually anyway? You know, put it out there and you know, make everything transparent. Yes, I wish the local professional football team would follow suit in that regard.
Well, you can file your complaints in Mike Vrabel's suggestion box, as we are often recommended to do. John Glennon here with us. All right, so trade deadline day in the NHL. The deadline here is 2 p.m. local time. David Poile, I saw you tweet or quote tweet this stat out courtesy of Sportsnet, that Poile, as the general manager of the Preds, has averaged one trade per deadline day during his tenure as an NHL GM. So not just as the Preds GM, but in his previous stops as well. 37 deadlines that David Poile has seen, which is an astronomical amount, and 37 times he has made a trade. What is the expectation for this hockey team right now? If they are to make an addition, where does it make the most sense to add?
I think clearly if they make an addition, which I tend to think they won't swing for the fences. You know, I don't think this is a team that this is one or two players away from making a, you know, a deep, deep run in the playoffs. So if they do, you know, add someone, I think they could certainly add some more scoring, some depth in the forwards, especially with all the injuries that they've had to deal with this year. So that is where I would look for something to happen. But you know, I think it's more likely that it's kind of a toe-the-line situation, which, as you said, you know, rather rare for David Poile. I think we still may see a, you know, one or two smaller deals, but I don't see a swing for the fences, and I don't think we'll, you know, by the same token, I don't think we'll see the big sell-off that we might have expected, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago either, because if we'd been asking that question at that point, I'm thinking, you know, almost no name is safe for the Predators, who were wretched at the time. You know, so whether it was a Forsberg, you know, Arvidsson, Ekholm, you know, I think all those names were in play if the Predators had continued to spiral as they had before. But now you're in a really interesting situation because you're, you know, the 12-3 team over the last 15 games. You're in a playoff position, and you know, this team hasn't had a ton of success, you know, the postseason the last couple of years. It hasn't had a lot of buzz. It doesn't have a lot of people talking. So, you know, a playoff berth is worth something, and getting a few home playoff games, which the Predators haven't had in a couple of years. Last year, of course, was in the bubble. you know, that's something tangible. You know, I think that's a goal worth shooting for. At the same time, if you're looking, if you're David Poile and you say, I got to look long term, this is a team that's 3-13-1 against the three teams above it in the division. You have to beat two of those teams to get out of your division in the, you know, and make a long run in the playoffs. So is it a wise move? You know, am I better off selling off a player, getting some assets for the future than I am making the playoffs and not going very far in all likelihood? It's a real interesting situation for David Poile. Another factor that comes to mind, what do you tell your players, your coaching staff, if they've busted their butts, you know, they've gone 12-3 with all kinds of players out of the lineup, they've improved greatly, and all of a sudden you say, hey guys, great job, but look, you know, I got to look out for 2-3 years down the line, so we're selling off some big names. That's a tough message to send to your players, to your staff, and I think to a lot of fans as well. So tough call for David Poile today.
They refuse to relinquish this fourth and final playoff spot in the Central, Johnny. I don't know. You're exactly right. They have worked so hard, to their credit, because, I mean, not just me, and I don't do this to take attention off of me running my fat mouth before the Preds, you know, before even the halfway point in the season, but they have worked so hard to find themselves in this position. It is unenviable, probably isn't the word for David Poile, but these are the decisions that he is tasked with making. But what it boils down to for me, Johnny, and you can follow John Glennon of Broadway Sports at Glennon Sports on the socials. Who do I look at and say, okay, why did it take injuries to your high-paid star players for you to adjust your lineup and find a formula that works better for this Nashville Predators team? I assume that is the fault of the coaching staff, but Poile, I feel like, has to have some kind of influence, given that this is his roster that he has constructed. Why did it take them so long? Or why did it have to be the injuries that forced their hand to find a situation that works better, especially with the younger players?
Yeah, we've certainly seen some solid contributions from some of the young guys too. And yeah, you can definitely look at some of these long term deals that the Preds signed. Whether that's the biggest one is Matt Duchene, but certainly Ryan Johansson comes to mind too. And these, the long-term nature of these deals and the fact that these guys aren't producing what they should be producing, clearly that lands at the feet of David Poile. And when you look at what's out of the lineup right now in terms of, again, Duchene is out, Forsberg's out, Dante Fabbro, Tolvanen, and still, guys are stepping up, not necessarily in huge scoring roles outside of Tolvanen. But, we're seeing some of the young guys like a Trennan, Tanner Janot, a guy who came in last night and really is a good physical young player. And right now, I think what we're seeing also is John Hines' system has really been kicking in for the last few weeks. And John Hines has come under criticism, and rightly so, too. But in his defense, he has never had that regular training camp that every other coach, most likely in the NHL has had, because of the COVID situation. So he never had that real long stretch to say, okay, this is what I want. And I feel like now is when the Preds are really starting to get some consistency in their lineup and play the way he wants and play the way they want. And as I say, that all leads to some very interesting questions in the next 2.5 hours or so for David Poile.
He is John Glennon of Broadway Sports. That's where you can read him. You can follow him, of course, at Glennon Sports on the socials. Johnny, I appreciate your patience. Thank you for joining us. We'll make sure that it's not so brief next time, because this was fun. Even if, like the podcast, I didn't get to cuss at you, I have certain restrictions on the FCC airwaves. We appreciate you, Johnny.
Absolutely. Always appreciate it, Buck. Always fun.
All right. We will come back. When we come back, there was a situation that happened to my friend group over the weekend. We're going to talk about what my friend Christian Reed is doing to raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. But to that same end, I lost a friend over the weekend, And my buddy, Cody Harmon, has called into the radio show. And we are going to, if you guys will indulge me, we will eulogize him coming up next. That's all that and much more. I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone. All right, so we've had a lot of fun today on the show. The show is not yet done, by the way. Buck Rising here with you until 1 o'clock. We will be joined by my buddy Christian Reed to talk about the money that he's raising for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society momentarily. They're out here saving lives. But over the weekend, my friend group lost a life, and you'll give me I hope you guys will give me a little grace here, because I'm not entirely sure how to handle this on air. I'll be honest with you, I haven't had a lot of time to process it, but it was just good fortune that my buddy Cody Harmon has called into the show. Cody, I really appreciate you doing this, and I don't know really where to start, but the obvious is that we lost Mitchell Hale over the weekend in a car accident. He was in critical condition and then ultimately ended up passing away at the age of 28, far too soon. And I don't know, it's stupid to have you on the radio show and say, I don't know where to start, but I guess I'll start by saying it's good to talk to you, brother, because I haven't talked to you in a really long time.
But good to talk to you as well, man. I've been listening to you since you've been on 104.5 and even before that when you were filling in. So congratulations. We'll start there. Congratulations on you.
Thank you,
you're doing a heck of a job, man, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
No. Like you say, it's there are no words to describe what happened, and there are listeners here that have had similar things happen to them, so I'm sure some people can relate. But I just wanted to devote this call to Mitchell Hale. He was a great friend of all of ours. And so at 27 years old, it's very unfortunate. So my thoughts and prayers go out to his family and his other friends, as this week will be very, very tough for him, his family, and for everybody involved.
No question. It's what people don't know is that I am an Indiana University alumni, but my freshman year was spent in Bowling Green, Kentucky, BGKY, at Western Kentucky University, because I was not smart enough to get into Indiana the first time. So Mitchell, Cody, and myself, along with several other of our friends, were in the same pledge class. And I have so many memories, Cody, of the time that the three of us and AJ Schapker and Landon Stanley, Sean Landry, so many other people whose names that I felt compelled to reach out to yesterday, because of the distance that has come between us, as happens in at any point in life. But I guess, is there a memory that we're safe to share on FCC radio? Remember, don't get me fined, Cody. But is there a memory of Mitchell that we can share from our freshman year that would pay tribute to what kind of a person that he was? One that comes to mind for you whenever you talk about the time that we spent at Western Kentucky in Bowling Green?
I like how you preface that with making sure not to get you fired. But anyway, I've been telling people all weekend, if you didn't know who Mitchell Hale was now, you were going to know about Mitchell Hale when he was in his 40s and 50s, because the man was going to be a millionaire. He was from the Hendersonville area, born and raised, was a JP2 guy, and after college went back to the Nashville area. But man, he always had a smile on his face, and he would give you the shirt off his back, although sometimes he couldn't even, come up with the money to do it for himself.
Yeah, just an incredibly unselfish individual. Brother, I really appreciate you calling into the show. Continue to be well. If you guys make your way into town I know we don't know details on the funeral service yet, but I hope to see you. And it means a lot that you would take the time to call in today.
Thanks, Buck, man. Appreciate it.
Cody Harmon with us on 104.5 The Zone. All right, we go to another hilltopper, because in losing a life, there is many, many efforts being made to save lives, courtesy of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. We now have Christian Reed, who is performing an exceptional feat, one that he has done before. In fact, one that our previous guest, John Glennon, wrote a piece on for The Athletic when the pandemic first hit. Christian, what's going on, my brother? I hope you're doing good.
Yeah, yeah. Not doing too bad. Just working, running a lot. But just trying to get as much of this good weather as we can. You know, it's kind of hit or miss when it's going to be 70 and when it's going to be 30. So hopefully the good weather's coming for me to run in now.
Yeah, so the one-man marathon is Christian's undertaking. He's raising funds for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, a very, very noble cause. You make sure that you go donate a few shekels, if you have some, at your disposal to Christian and his efforts in order to help save more lives. Christian, what can you tell us about how the one-man marathon came to you as an idea? Because I know you were scheduled to run a marathon last year that ended up being canceled because of a pandemic, and you proceeded on as best you could anyway.
So last year, basically what happened, it got canceled. My uncle, Donnie Eden, who had ran a couple marathons beforehand, had the noble idea of, hey, what if you did it by yourself? We live stream it on Facebook, blah, blah, blah. Well, we did that, and come to find out, it was way bigger of a hit than I would have ever imagined. So come back to this year, I tried to do the marathon that I was scheduled to do last year, and again, they canceled it. So this year, I actually took a different direction. This is the 20-year anniversary of my uncle, Donnie Eden, being cancer-free from leukemia. So he's doing a massive fundraiser, and I decided to team up with him to raise money this year. So hopefully, we're doing a little more marketing, trying to get the word out there a little more. So if people ever wanted to come in and run a few miles with me, Buck, you may be able to run, what is it, 0.1 with me or something.
Point one. Wait. First I made a face like, no way in hell I'm running a couple miles with you. But then you said 0.1. Surely I look like maybe I don't look like I'm in great shape right now, but I feel like I'm in better shape than that. At least I ran 0.8 this morning without, you know, needing to double over and feel like I was dying.
Come on, man. You could have made it a mile.
I could make it a mile. You know what? In fact, Christian, I will go at least a mile with you, and I will help you raise funds for this cause, you know, in honor of your uncle and for all of the lives that we have lost to, you know, cancer is dastardly in all of its forms, not just leukemia, but this in particular is a very difficult kind of disease to manage, and one that very, you know, it's honestly, and I don't have to tell you this or your uncle, but an upset that he was able to overcome this particular disease for all of the evil that it has wrought upon society.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's something that when it happens to somebody that's close to you, you almost make it even more of a priority to help those, you know, who have had it, who have been affected by it. And who are actually being affected by it right now. So, you know, it's always good to donate something to a good cause. I kind of figured out in my life, I was a washed up athlete. I needed something to compete with. Why not do something I'm good at and raise money for it? So that's kind of the whole goal for me.
No question. Where can people follow your progress? And most importantly, where can they donate?
Yeah, so we actually have a Facebook page. It's Christian Reed One Man Marathon. You can go follow it on Facebook. Just hit the search link for it. Also, I'm posting stuff on my personal Facebook, on Twitter, you know, retweet, all that stuff. The more people we can get out to, the more that, you know, we can donate and raise. Last year, we were reaching people in Maine, Vermont, just random places, just from people sharing it. So a share and a like go a long way. Obviously, donations are what we're looking for, but raising awareness is also something that I'm looking to do too.
All right. Well, when Christian Reed is not calling in to complain about the Tennessee Titans after a loss, because I do know that he's a frequent caller to 104.5 The Zone, he's out here raising money for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the one-man marathon. Christian Reed. Crick, I appreciate you stopping by. Thanks for doing it, brother.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on.
All right. When we come back, we will get back into the Eddie George news and an update on Jadeveon Clowney, his free agency interests, one team in particular, but another team in the AFC South, not named the Tennessee Titans. They are very, very closely monitoring the situation. I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone.